If you asked a question on how many of you are in a POC stage, 70-80% of the hands would go up in the conferences. So why is that? Are we in still POC modes and not being able to take it to the next level?
Hi, Ash. Thanks so much for joining us on Agents of Change, the Agentica AI podcast today. We're very, very happy, a little delighted that you've decided to join us. I'm sure our audience are really going to benefit from your expertise. Why don't you start just by doing a quick intro to yourself, a little bit about your background, what you led you to your kind of current position?
Sure. Anthony, thank you for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here and excited to talk about one of my most passionate topics about AI and the value of AI. So let me give you a little background about me. I have been in data and analytics for 20 plus years. I think there is a lot of hype about agentic AI. What agentic AI really is?
Yeah, definitely. Let's get into some basic definitions first.
So let's talk about, you know, there are three words that are being used, you know, in a very blurred manner and interchangeably. One is generative AI. One is AI agent. And then the third one is agentic AI. So are they all the same? Probably when I talk to people, a lot of them are like thinking that they are very similar to each other. Here's an example. So generative AI is very simple. You want it to go and, let's say, write a letter to my boss about X, Y, and Z, right? Or about a promotion. I'll go and write a very beautiful letter, and a very persuasive letter if you ask it to, and it'll write that letter for you, right? So that's generative AI. A lot of us, and from kids to adults, are using that generative AI through ChatGPT or Gemini, whatever your choice of tool is. The second one is an AI agent. Now, an AI agent takes the generative part and takes it to the next level, right? So now what it would, the example here could be that write me an email, but at the same time, can you go do some research before you write an email on a topic that I'm going to present it to my boss, right? So now what you have done is created an agent to do the research. And now the research is, could be a very repetitive task. So think about it as do a research about a company, let's say my company, ADI. So that do a, the new nuggets of information from the web that you find every day in the morning at 8 a.m., give that information to me and send me an email. So that's an agent. Now, what an agent has done is taken a couple of tasks that are repetitive, but there's something new that comes out of it. So that's an AI agent. And the agentic AI, which is the third piece, which where the excitement is, where if you talk to a lot of people or the people in the industry who are really excited about, hey, this is the game changer in the world. And it is, I would say, takes multiple tasks and multiple things and pulls it all together. It's not just looking at one area, and it is not just looking at keeping, you know, one database to which it goes in and looks at. So an agentic AI is now do the research. At the same time, go find the professors who have actually done the research, have a conversation with the professor, and say that I am writing a note, or you know, I'm presenting it to my boss, and I wanted to see the authenticity of this. Now think about it: how much more work, like you and I, as a research assistant, if I had a research assistant, that's what he or she would do. Now there's a lot more things that go into this process of being agentic, which means you are automating not only just a specific task but a series of tasks. Right? So that's what an agentic AI is. And I do believe that it has a lot of potential. It is going to be a game changer, but I still feel it's a few years out from a practical implementation perspective. I talk to a lot of my colleagues and I talk to a lot of my peers across the industry, and I've yet to come across someone who has said that, hey, I am in a fully productionalized mode of agentic AI. They may be doing one or two agents here or there, or they may be doing generative AI, for example, but truly agentic AI, we are not there. And we are not there because, you know, we can talk about more details why we are not there and why it is still very complex to put it all together.
Yeah, definitely. All right, then. So let's first start on the kind of the potential then and the value of it. What do you see as being the kind of potential for real value in agentic AI, especially in particularly from a business standpoint?
Sure. So I feel that AI or agentic AI or a version of that should be used to either augment or to amplify what you're doing in your organization, right? The value of your AI should be either affecting your top line or your bottom line in some shape or form. In most of the commercial organizations, or most of, you know, you're not in an academic, most of the organizations are going to use AI. They are not academic and are commercial in nature. And for the organizations, there are different types of pressures. There are commercial pressures, there are strategic pressures, there are competitive pressures. And how can you take AI and the power of AI and improve your profitability is what the key question is going to be. Starting with, when you think about the value of ROI, it starts with what do you want to do, right? In, let's say 2 years ago when, you know, 3 years ago when we started this journey with generative AI, when it had just started, the questions around how can we use generative AI for the organization? There were 300 use cases that came together from which we could go in and take a look at different things that can be done. But are those 300 different types of projects, are they really going to make an impact on to the company or not? Is it truly affecting the productivity? Is it affecting the strategic value? Is it affecting how the business is done? Is it generating revenue? Is it generating, you know, less amount of time to get all of that work done? I think people kind of lose the thought process on that. So the ROI starts with what you want to do, and is it going to be impactful to the organization? You start with that. How do you do that? Like, there are two ways to think about it. And I think I've seen this mistake being made in a lot of times, a lot of people, a lot of organizations, and a lot of people that I talk to. So let me give you an example. If you go to a doctor and you've stepped into the doctor's office and he says, looks at you and says, Ash, I know what the problem is. Here's a prescription. Go take this drug and you'll be fine. How would you feel about it?
Not very good.
Not probably
good. Necessarily, right? Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So what was missing in this, the missing part was that we didn't do the diagnosis, right? You want the doctor to do the diagnosis of what is happening with you, what the problem is. And that is exactly what happens is a lot of AI enthusiasts, people who have, you know, who know what can be done, they have already figured out what a solution could be for a certain department, how finance can use AI, how supply chain can use AI, right? And they are so excited that the minute you go get into the door with these people in these organizations, you start throwing ideas and solutions to a problem that you don't even know about, right? So in a medical profession, if you give a prescription without diagnosis, it's called malpractice, right? We do it in our environment all the time. And what we have to do is starting with what problem to solve, we're now connecting the dots here, is having an active listening. Starting with the teams who are on a day-to-day basis having some issues and challenges and talking to them, what can I do for you? Where are the biggest bottlenecks? Where are the biggest hurdles? Where are the biggest, you know, profitability or time to market or growth opportunities that I can work with you to understand and unlock the power of what you are doing, irrespective of what the technology is, irrespective of what AI can do? Because typically what you would do is, if you understand the problem, then you will be able to go in and take a look at that problem and solve the problem in a much better way. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I can give
you
a dodge.
Yeah,
definitely.
Right. Go for it.
So we were building, we had competitive pressures of on time and time to market. Typically, it takes about 2 years to take a chip from design all the way to production, right? Anywhere from, I would say, 2 years on an average. As we were talking to the engineering teams, one of the key things that came out from the discussions on how we can help and what is on their minds and what are the pressures for them, the key thing that came out was, what is the possibility that we can reduce the time to market in designing these chips, right? Instead of 2 years, can we do it in 1 year? That would be a game changer in our marketplace. So as we defining the problem, because this is a big piece of what we were going to go after, we brought a bunch of engineers in a room and we said, let's learn from you. What do you do on a day-to-day basis? What do you do when you go in and build these chips? And specifically in our company, like, 85,000 different chips that we have built in the past, engineers are the inventors. They are the ones who are doing things, they're trying to change the world from their perspective. So they don't look at something that was done in the past. So what we call is, have you looked at the designs of 85,000 chips that we've done in the past? Have you looked at them? No, we have not, right? Why? Because it is so difficult. It is so difficult to go in and take a look at that. Each chip has got various different circuits. It could have 10, 15, 20, 50 different circuits within that small piece of chip that works. And those circuits are lying in a database that is highly complex to go and navigate and pull and take a look and see if I can use it. And if I use it, would I be able to, would it work in what I'm trying to do? So all of that is a very complex and tedious and difficult piece to go after, right? Not possible before, but possible now. Because you have the data that you can bring, can be used with, you can vectorize the data through vector databases and create a vector database. You can create a searchable Elastic or whatever you want to do, a natural language processing on top of it, or an LLM on top of it, and say, I'm trying to design X, Y, and Z chip. Help me do this work better. Have I done this before? Did it work? Did it not work? What were the, different test parameters on which it was tested, and did it work or did it not work? And so as a design engineer, you are starting with a wealth of information on your hands and your fingertips, and that'll make you smarter, not only smarter, but even if you don't use what you already have, what has been there in the past, now you can actually go in with a lot more knowledge about how you would design that, right? So when you design, not only have you improved your design time, but the accuracy of what you would design is going to be improved as well. So defining the problem, working with the business of saying, how do I do this? And helping them find that solution through your AI is the right way to approach it. I then go in and say, I have all of these vector databases and I have all of this, AI infrastructure and what I can do for you, or, let me tell you what to do. But helping and learning from them is an important aspect, which is going to be incredibly important for any organization or any team who are providing the AI services to be successful if you start from there.
Yeah, definitely. I think that sounds really, what you're saying in a way sounds similar to any tech product in a way, isn't it? And what I remember reading in an article quite some time ago that was kind of about the top reasons why startups fail, most tech startups. And one of the most common reason they said still was just that most people don't have an idea that's actually useful to anyone.
There you go.
Like, you know, maybe they've got an idea that sounds like great in their head, or maybe like, you know, when you create the thing, like it is cool for like 5 minutes, you know, it does something really impressive. But a lot of the time, the kind of tools that really take off are the ones that kind of actually solve like kind of more mundane problems that are kind of like a real kind of pain in people's lives, you know, just even if it's something like really not very like fancy. You know, they're the kind of things that go further a lot of the time. And I think what you're saying about AI is, you know, as it being kind of something to augment people's lives, so improve people's lives, people have to come at it at a standpoint of, well, how is this actually going to solve problems, right? How is this going to go hand in hand with people? How are people going to be able to integrate this into their day-to-day life? Because in a sense, we're already kind of there, aren't we? In a little bit, in the sense that not so much with AI, with agentic AI, but with generative AI, I'm constantly using it all day. Probably in ways that I don't actually even realize I'm doing it anymore, you know? It's like,
and it is.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially like for things like, I think for things like admin-based work, it's just great. You know, say you need to send out like a bunch of emails, very kind of like businessy, like official kind of emails, and you're kind of like, look, I just need to draft an email, need to be super professional, but this is the gist of what I need to say. It's really good at doing things like that. Obviously, if it's gonna, you know, it's something you're gonna send out to important people, it's something you really want to review. But that is definitely some value there. You know, it can just take kind of that, to take the pressure away on it from the work that you do, where it's kind of like, it's not hard, it just takes up time. You know, that's what I've seen as the value so far.
Anthony, is an excellent point. Is how are you helping? How are you augmenting? How are you, you know, creating more time for an individual? In your case, if you don't have to write that email, I mean, writing an email still takes time, and a professional email, you might want to read it and proof it and, you know, kind of do two or three reads before you send it. But if you get a first draft in a few seconds, then, you know, you're not spending that 15 minutes or half an hour on an important email. You might just spend 5 minutes. And now you have that extra 20 minutes that you can do something more with your time and be more productive in different ways. Obviously, if you choose to be more productive, or you could go and have a cup of coffee too.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be many people who will abuse that and kind of just take back time in the day just to kind of watch TV, especially so many people being remote workers now and home workers.
True.
So no, really not. Great. All right, then. So I think that's great. Let's talk a little bit then about one of the things I've heard mentioned before, Ash, is that one of the specific challenges with AI, especially AI products, is scaling them in particular. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? What that challenge looks like, and, you know, how people can overcome it, how people who are heading up AI related companies can overcome that problem.
Sounds good, Anthony. You are asking a really good question on the scaling, right? This is the hot topic in any conference that I go. Recently, I was there at one of the conferences too, and what I am seeing is there are a lot of teams who are creating proof of concepts, but they cannot scale it. And if you look at many, like, you know, if I asked a question in the room and I asked people, how many of you are actually running at scale in a generative AI or even in agentic AI use cases, there are very few. However, if you ask the question on how many of you are in a POC stage, 70-80% of the hands would go up in the conferences. So why is that? Are we in still POC modes and not being able to take it to the next level? I would say there there are, besides what we just talked about as to what business problem you're trying to solve, right? That is an important aspect, because if you're trying to solve a mundane problem, you'll always be in a POC mode and no one's like, oh yeah, take a look at it and it's nice to have and I don't think so, I need that particular solution for me. But if you have identified what the right problem that you're going to solve, there are two other aspects that are extremely important. The first one is about, do you have the right infrastructure? And the second one is about, is the solution that you're producing, is it integrated into day-to-day lives, into the day-to-day workings of someone, right? So let's talk about the infrastructure a little bit. In the infrastructure side, see, for years and years, we've dealt with structured data. Not a problem. We have matured with, you know, databases and so on and so forth. The new player or the new problems on hand or the new, you know, data sets that we have not tackled as organizations in the past is the unstructured data. And unstructured data is the documents. It's like, you know, in the example that I gave earlier, it's the circuit diagrams that are sitting in some place in PDF documents that you are now have to bring and retrieve and bring it out, right? So if you don't have the right infrastructure to work with these unstructured data, you're bound to fail. You have to bring in databases like graph databases or vector databases to put as part and parcel of your infrastructure, as part of your architecture. And what I see is a lot of people are taking the unstructured data, they're forgetting about the unstructured data and just focusing on structured. And, you know, because some of the open source databases are available to you freely, so you would go in and download and you know, a vector database on your laptop and start working on your POC, and there you go, right? But that has to integrate. That has to integrate with your entire ecosystem, because you're never going to go in and have just unstructured data not working with your current databases, right? Having that in one environment, having that in one platform is an important aspect that people are not thinking about it. The reason people are not thinking about it, again, is we have separated an AI team from a data team, and there are some issues and challenges, because if, you know, AI team really needs that unstructured data and structured data, and if it is not in one place, you're going to slow things down, you're going to create the latency, you're going to create an issues and challenges, especially when you start thinking about scaling it. Right. The second aspect of the infrastructure is not only just vector and graph databases, but how are you going to create, even in the structured environment, are you doing it on-prem? Or are you connecting it to an OpenAI API or a Gemini API? Or are you bringing in a Llama 3 or a Llama 4 in your environment? Because that is an important aspect of your architecture. If you don't have it in there and figure it out, sooner or later, you're going to hit the brick wall and you will not know what to do. Because if you have to roll out, let's say, a solution to 10,000, 15,000, 50,000 employees, that requires the rigor, that requires the thinking and the thought process of a regular product. You need to know when, if it goes down, what will happen, and is, you know, is there someone supporting it or not? And if there are 2,000 users at the same time asking and going for your queries, what will happen? How much time would it take? What's the latency effect on all of that? So all of these are architectural issues and challenges that really needs to be thought through. I may get a little more technical here, but even within the AI ecosystem, are you building a RAG, or, you know, are you tuning your algorithms? Because a RAG is a very different construct, and the latency on that is very different than what you would do in a fine-tuned model, right? So all of these things have to be thought through if you're building a system that needs to scale. The challenge I see is we are doing this in silos, right? Because there's an AI team who's thinking it through. When they're in a POC mode, they've gone in and said, I have to just build this and show it as a proof of concept, and I'll be able to do that. And when you're doing it in silos creates complexity. It does not create simplicity. And silos, complexity creates friction. Complexity creates cost, and complexity creates risk. And if we are not thinking it through, instead of simplifying things, we have now made it way more complex to scale certain things, and that's where people fail. So that's the infrastructure aspect of where I wanted to get in and share some of my thinking and thought process.
Yeah, it's really interesting, I think, in particular. I think what the future of AI, I think, is going to be dependent on back to what we were saying, really, is how seamlessly it can sort of be, it can flow with other people's kind of tech stack, in a way, with whatever they've got already that they're using.
That's a good point, too. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't touch on the second point on that. I kind of went into the infrastructure aspect of it and incorporating it as part of your workflow. So in the example that I gave with the engineers that we were building, the solution for designing chips much faster, if it is not integrated in my day-to-day work, if as an engineer, when I come to work and I open up my laptop and, I have to go at a different screen in a different place and, I have to wait to do my job, am I going to adopt it? No. And you're not going to adopt it. And what happens is typically, again, is if you have not worked right from the beginning with your stakeholders. So in this particular case, if I didn't bring the engineering team along with me right from the beginning when I'm building the solution, and if they are telling me that if it is not integrated in my this particular screen or this particular step, then, the adoption is going to be very difficult. And adoption at scale is not about five people doing the things. Adoption at scale is, maybe your 5,000 engineers or 10,000 engineers who are actually doing this work on a day-to-day basis. Can they adopt something new and seamlessly? So integrating into the workflows of what you do and how you do it, from a UI perspective, is the other problem that I'm seeing that people are not thinking it through.
Yeah, definitely. I think with anything, it's always about removing the friction as much as possible, isn't it? I think you don't make something a pain for people to adopt, no matter how impressive it is. People are so busy, which sounds like a silly point, but I think it's a major factor in a way, is that you have to factor in a lot of the time that your audience are people who are high stress, a lot to do in any particular day. You need to make it as seamless as possible for them to adopt your solution. So it's not just about your tool solve a problem that they have, but how quickly can they get started? How quickly can they get moving with it? How quickly can they find the value in it once they adopt it?
Correct.
As well? And that can be, a major stumbling block, I think, because sometimes people will start using a tool and they don't even manage to find the value in it. They'll use it for 4 or 5 minutes and they'll sort of say, wow, I don't see how this helps me. And it's because it's not designed in such a way where they can really see the benefit immediately.
You nailed it.
I think that's another thing.
You nailed it.
Yeah, 100%.
And adoption is so critical, because otherwise what will happen is there are, in a team of 10,000 people who are supposed to use it, there are 10, 15, 20 people who really like it and enjoy it, and they'll go and do whatever they need to do. But as a company who's invested millions of dollars in a solution, you want your entire workforce to adopt it. And adoption is no different than, again, a new product that you're putting out there has to be thought through from a UI perspective, a change management perspective, changing behaviors of, there's an additional step in your process, but that additional step, it will reduce five other things that you have to do in the future, or, other steps too. So So that's part and parcel of the adoption part of it.
Yeah, thanks. I wanted to go into a little bit, go back to agentic AI specifically a little bit, because you mentioned that you think that it has a lot of potential, but that at the moment it's not quite there. What is holding it back currently? What are some of the potential fears around it? You know, what are you hearing kind of on the ground conversation around it at the moment? What are some of the kind of stumbling blocks?
See, it's incredibly inevitable that agentic AI is the future. I see it definitely in about, I would say my gut says that we are about 2 years to 3 years out in getting to at least, you know, some early versions of agentic AI, which means a lot of work that we do can be automated, right? I do feel we are not there. It's not because of the fear, but the technology is moving at a very fast pace, right? We have more technology today than what we can absorb and what we can adopt, right? Within the span of 2 years or 2.5 years since the, you know, let's just say November 2022 onward, there are so many new products and tools in the market, and we are evolving, right? The word generative AI has become redundant in about 2 years, and agentic AI is the new word. The very fact that, you know, that thinking and that thought process, that we are still evolving. The hyperscalers are still evolving, right? We don't have a holy grail of this is how what we would do, right? Even in the, when you think about agentic AI, you know, the LangChain or the MCP protocol, right? You know, which is the right one to have the agent-to-agent conversations. It's so new. MCP is, what, 2-3 months old? So we are evolving. The technology is evolving at a really fast pace. Even the early adopters are struggling with which technology to use, right? And how to go about it. So there is that one complexity. The second complexity is we touched upon a little bit earlier, that even if I started today, I need a 6 months to a 9 months runway to build this infrastructure, right? The third aspect is, do I have the right talent? For 6 months ago, when I was trying to put, you know, a whole vector database and a graph database, vector databases are what, three years at the most old. I mean, they've existed, but true databases and the knowledge that people have, it's so difficult. I mean, so difficult to find talent who can take and know about these. So what are you going to do? You're going to train new people, and training new people is not, you know, it takes time. There are no universities who are saying that I have a fully trained agentic AI workforce, or, you know, people who can come in and do the work. There are a lot of people, a lot of teams who are evolving, who are learning as we talk with these new, you know, MCP, the agent-to-agent protocol of talking, you know, was released, what, about a month ago. And now there are teams who are getting into and understanding, do I use API? Do I use MCP? Which of the vendors are adopting MCP or not, and so on and so forth. So those are some of the challenges. Those are the practical challenges and logistic challenges that I don't think so we have figured them out. Theoretically, conceptually, if someone has an up-to-date talent and an up-to-date infrastructure and an up-to-date way to go after and solve some of those problems, yes, you can, and you should be able to get into the agentic AI workflows, but we are not there. I mean, that's why I say it is about 2 years before an organization would start seeing the real benefits of it at scale, right? But anyone who's any organization who's sitting on the side and saying, let me wait for it, that's not a good idea either. You have to start investing in it now. And depending on the complexity of your own organization, you could just the setting up of the infrastructure and integrating it with your current environment could be anywhere from 6 months to 18-month project just by that idea and the thought process.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to hear that. Okay, so I thought what would be interesting then, Ash, if we're talking about potential, is if you could think maybe like, what do you think is the change that's coming that's either agentic AI related or just AI related in general, that people maybe, or maybe a particular industry that people haven't thought about, or a particular aspect of life that, you know, people don't talk about a lot. What do you think is a change that's coming due to AI that's going to surprise people, or that people maybe aren't expecting?
So surprise part of it is a good question. I would say the way we do our day-to-day jobs, except for in a few fields where a lot of manual labor is involved, I would say that our workings are going to change, and people who are not adopting it will be surprised how soon they'll become redundant. They'll be surprised, not in a good way, that how soon they'll become redundant, right? People who are still sitting on the side and saying, I don't know whether this is, you know, I should get into this or not. So a surprise factor is that it is coming, and it is coming fast. And if you're not adopting it, you're going to be on a side which you will not like. Now, the very early signs of what we are seeing is with some of the companies from Microsoft to Google, you name it, are starting to do their initial layoffs. I don't know all the intricacies of what they are or why certain layoffs are being done, but we know they're talking about it, that, you know, the productivity has increased. Coding, right? It is now openly said that, you know, 30% of the code is being written by AI agents. So if you have 30% more productivity in this particular case, if you have a finite way of getting to your work, people are saying that, you know, I don't need that many coders. So that's the aspect that you and I don't want to talk about it because it's uncomfortable. But don't be surprised if you are as part and parcel of that aspect of what change is coming from that perspective. Sorry to be a little bit pessimistic from that perspective.
No. I think it's important to be realistic. You know, on a podcast, there's no point in mincing words, I think. Okay, so in that case, then, can you give an example? Then maybe you're somebody who you know, you are in coding or something like that, or particular job which maybe is going to fall under threat. You know, how do you then future-proof your career? Like, how can you go about kind of, I guess, working alongside AI so that you'll be the person who is kind of, I guess, working with it rather than being pushed out by it? I don't know how else to word it. Like, let's end on a positive note, maybe. Let's try and think of, like, example of how someone could maybe future-proof their career. What do you think?
Oh, that's a good point. I believe there are going to be two types of people, right, who are actually writing code in AI or enabling the AI aspect, and the ones who are working with it. And if you're on either side of the equation, I would say an AI coder by itself or an AI person who is bringing some of the AI solution cannot find ways by themselves to bring change, right? However, you know your job better than anyone else. If you can start thinking about how to be more productive in your field, how to be more, you know, what if I could do X, Y, and Z, and then, you know, what are the things that I don't have to do on a day-to-day basis so that I can use my intellectual horsepower in ways that I cannot use because of the mundane works that I have to do on a day-to-day basis. I would highly encourage you to think about that. I would highly encourage you to go talk to your AI team about it. Involve your AI teams in saying, I want to change what I'm seeing, right? Be that change agent, be that change, because remember, as we were talking earlier in the podcast, an AI team by themselves. They don't know all the details of what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a great point. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So partner with them, you know, come together and bring that change in your organization. And that's the best way, because if you're the champion, if you are the expert, you will still remain the expert.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think you made a great point there, Ash, is that people, you know, the people who are making these decisions aren't necessarily right, you know? And maybe sometimes it's a case of people who are being pushed out, maybe just not advocating for themselves enough in terms of how they can be an ex, you know, how the value that they can bring, still bring alongside artificial intelligence. Because nobody is saying at this point, oh, let's stop the train on the track. You know, I mean, they're like, it's one of those things now, isn't it? It's inevitable. It's absolutely inevitable. There's nothing you can do to stop it, and you shouldn't. But I wonder if it's just a case of, like you said, people being proactive and sort of arguing for their own value alongside technological developments and maybe upskilling as well. I think maybe it's a case of, yeah, just being aware of what's coming in the future, like you were saying, and working to kind of cement yourself and working alongside the people who are making decisions to prove your value as well. In a little bit.
Yeah. And you're right. One of the ways to think about it is whenever there is new technology, there is change in how we do work. And it goes all the way back to the Industrial Revolution, right? When the first of the factories were brought online, people were afraid. People were petrified that my jobs are going to be affected, right? Because now you have a factory that is replacing a work of a human being. So it's no different than what we are seeing today. Obviously, it's at a higher scale, and that is the challenge that we have on our hand. But I'm very optimistic that this new revolution, people are going to learn and adopt and do things differently. It's just that, you know, you have to go through, and as we were earlier talking, do you want to bring that change, or do you want to be on the other side of the change and then get along with the change?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So how much of you want to put in into your career, into your ways of working, versus, you know, once you're on the other side and then say, let me see what I'm going to go and do now and upskill myself?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's definitely a case of people educating themselves, isn't it? And being aware, I think, of how they can work with AI, you know, and I think, you know, I'm aware of it, I think, with generative AI, with large language models in particular, because I do it so often. You know, I'm aware of the fact that I can't just put out something that's generated from scratch by ChatGPT for various reasons, you know. But people who maybe aren't interacting with it, aren't working with it every day, maybe aren't aware of this. You know, and I think maybe there's some value as well in, you know, maybe workshops. AI workshops are a good idea as well. How people can learn not just about what AI does, what generative AI and what agentic AI is going to do, but how they can work with it to improve what they do, I think would maybe be something that people should look into as well. Or maybe that companies, organizations should invest in. Maybe we should have training on AI like we have training on anything else, you know?
Spot on, Anthony, there. So training is a big aspect. You can, first of all, there are a lot of courses that are free and easily available. So if you are one of those guys or gals who are proactive about your career, there is enough on your own to learn, right? I post this podcast, if you ask me, I would kind of give you some links where people can go in and take a look. And, you know, these are all courses from good places, from Stanford and Harvard. And, you know, these organizations are putting out courses that are easily and freely available. But at the same time, if you are a company and if you're not investing in your own employees, I think you are harming your own self, right? Because this is the expertise, the human knowledge that has been built in your company, do you want to lose it? That's the key piece. So, you know, training is an important aspect. And I see a lot of companies already investing in the training. Those who are not, they should.
Yeah. Yeah. You risk losing a lot of good talent, don't you? I think people who could adapt to it, definitely. You know, I think it was probably the case, I feel like, when people switch to, I don't know, word processors, you know, using like typewriters in the office and stuff. I expect that, you know, people en masse had to retrain in that. And, you know, it's, I wonder if it's a similar kind of thing, you know, it's like, yeah.
You're right. It's technology and adopt. And all of this change is going to be really good. That's how I feel. It's change is difficult, as we all know that, but it's going to be ultimately be good. Good for the human society, I mean, our society and humanity in general. I mean, we just are talking right now on day-to-day basis what agentic AI can do, but the overall aspect of what is coming is exciting, right? It's unprecedented change that is going to come in and improve and bring solutions that we have not thought about. Maybe that's a whole new topic for a different episode, but I won't get into those details right now.
Thank you, Ash. Thanks so much for your time today. If people want to reach out to you, find out more, this is plug time. Is there anything you want to plug or see if you want to talk about particular?
Best way to reach me is just go on LinkedIn and ping me from there.